And so, in short, everything remains on hold, and everything remains unspoken. And Hallie gets more confused about where they are going and what is wrong, even though technically nothing is wrong. And she gets angry with Howard. And Howard, as a result, feels even less like getting married. Actually, when the plates start flying, it feels like they've already been married for years. After dinner, microwaved, a détente of sorts is reached, whereby he sits reading in the living room while she watches TV. When she rises to turn in at 10:30, he presents his cheek for her to kiss. The protocol that has emerged of late is that the first person to the bedroom is given a half hour's grace, so he or she can be asleep by the time the second comes in. It is 45 days, if you're asking, since they last had sex. Nothing has been explicitly said. It is something they have agreed on tacitly. Indeed, is one of the few things they do not at present disagree on. Eavesdropping on the pornographic conversations of the boys at school, Howard considers how inconceivable the idea of not wanting to have sex would have seemed to his younger self. Remembers how his every atom hurled itself, mostly fruitlessly, after physical contact with the unthinking, unstoppable urgency of a wild salmon flapping up a waterfall.
There's a woman in your bed and you're not having sex with her.
He can practically hear the disappointment and confusion in that younger self's voice. He's not saying that he likes the present situation, but it is easier, at least in the short to middle term. Often, as they lie side by side in the darkness, neither letting on to the other that they are still awake, he has long, candid conversations with her in his imagination, where he fearlessly lays everything out on the table. Sometimes these imaginary conversations end with the two of them breaking up, others with their realizing that they can't live apart. Either way, it feels good to make a decision. Tonight, though, he is not thinking about this. Instead, he is sitting in the front row of a classroom, staring with the other boys at a globe that spins with luxurious, excruciating slowness under slender fingers. And as he stares into it, the globe changes under the fingers from a map of the world into a crystal ball. A crystal ball come looky dip, where any future you want is there for the taking. And under his breath he is murmuring,
"We'll see about that. We'll see."
Whoosh! It's a lift, going up your brain and right through into space. You can feel your eyes bulging like they're going to explode. Your head's full of elephants, cartoon elephants in a line, lifting their hooves and playing their trunks so music comes out. You're laughing and laughing. You laugh so much you can hardly stand. But on the ground, Morgan is crying. He is crying because Barry's kneeling on his arms, pinning him down. Above the skips, the donut sign shines in the other direction, like it doesn't want to see. Behind Ed's is where things happen. And if you know what is good for you, you will stay the fuck away. Almost as soon as they come, the happy explosions start to drain away. Carl stops laughing and takes a step forward. Morgan shrinks back as far as he's able, his white feet waggling in the dark like little animals. Barry whispers in his ear,
"Just do yourself a favor and hand them over."
"I don't have any,"
Morgan pleads.
"I swear."
"Then why did you come?"
Barry's voice is gentle, like a mother's voice.
"Why did you come down here, you faggot?"
"Because you told me to,"
Morgan says, between sobs.
"We also told you to bring something."
When Morgan says nothing, Barry slaps him on the cheek.
"We fucking told you to bring something, shithead."
"I came to tell you I couldn't bring them."
Morgan's face is lifted up and back to look at Barry behind him, so the tears trickle backwards towards his ears.
Why not?
My mum keeps them locked away. She keeps them locked away.
Carl's head is now very heavy. The elephants have stopped dancing. One after the other, they are crashing to the floor. From far away, he hears Barry say,
"We asked you nicely."
He gives Carl the signal. Carl shakes the can hard. He knows what he has to do. But first, whoosh! The sky bounces and pops. He comes out from under his jacket. His face a smiley face, drawn on with crayon.
"Do it,"
Barry hisses. He lifts his cigarette lighter to the tip of the can.
"Oh, God!"
Morgan squeaks.
"Oh, God!"
"Don't be stupid, Morgan. Just give us what we want."
"I can't."
His face is shiny wet with crying.
"I can't. My mum will find out."
"Okay, Morgan,"
Barry says, like he is sad about it.
"Then you know what we have to do."
Carl sinks to one knee and aims the can.
"No!"
Morgan screams, but no one can hear him from here.
"No! Wait!"
The flame roars, and for a second it swallows up everything. Then it goes, leaving a blue-white flash glowing in the dark. The air is full of the smell of burning.
"Have you something to give us now, Morgan?"
Barry says. Morgan is crying without making any noise. He rolls over onto his stomach, squirming around like a worm in the dirt.
"Have you changed your mind? Have you something to give us? Or do you want to have another talk with the dragon here?"
Morgan shrivels up, like he's been burned again. Then his hand appears, holding up an orange, see-through tube. Barry grabs it.
"Why didn't you just give it to us when we asked? You could have saved all of us a lot of trouble, arsehole."
Morgan is too busy crying to reply. This weird shaking crying that doesn't make any sound. His feet are all red. You can see it, even in the dark. Barry turns to Carl.
"Let's get out of here."
Carl nods. As he goes, he sees Morgan's phone has fallen onto the ground. He picks it up and puts it in his pocket. In the jacks of Burger King, Barry shakes out 4 pills from the orange tube onto the toilet lid. He mashes them up with his phone and makes the powder into 2 fat lines. It was his idea, so he goes first. Then it's Carl's turn. He leans in with the Burger King straw and snorts. Powder charges up his nose. Instantly, with a metal noise zing like a sword being drawn, everything tightens to one sharp edge. Now it all makes sense. Carl feels shivery new. He feels ice cold. Everything is great. It is great to be here with Barry. It was a good plan to get the pills from Morgan Bellamy. They leave the cubicle and walk out into the silver and white and glass of the mall, like 2 G's in a hip-hop video. They ride up the down escalator and down the up escalator. They shout things at girls. They steal a cigarette lighter, a pack of cards, Marbella, Ireland magazine. Then it starts getting boring.
"Let's go and visit the gook,"
Barry says. On the way back, they check on Morgan. But he is gone. Do you think he'll tell? No way, because he knows what would happen to him then. The gook isn't in Ed's tonight, just Gookette. She looks up, and when she sees them, she goes stiff. They walk up to the counter, real slow. In the background, Bethany is playing. "I wish I was 18, so you could photograph me. We'd put it on the internet so everyone could see. How I make your love grow. The things you do to me when teacher isn't looking. When my parents are asleep."
"Can I help y'all?"
Gookette says, like she doesn't want to help them. In her gook voice, the words come out, "Can I help you?" Like she is retarded. Barry pretends to read the big lit-up menu behind her head.
"Yes. I would like an Agent Orange juice, please."
We don't have.
You don't have? Okay. Then I'll have a napalm sandwich.
We don't have.
You don't have napalm sandwiches either?
Only stuff on menu.
Beside him, Carl is laughing, because he knows Agent Orange and napalm are things they dropped on the gooks to burn them in the Vietnam War. He knows because Barry told him. Barry knows everything about Vietnam. He has seen every film. Platoon, Apocalypse Now, Hamburger Hill, Full Metal Jacket, Good Morning Vietnam, Rambo, First Blood, Parts 1 and 2. Other ones as well. He has them at home on DVD. I wish I was 18. It would be so fine. Bethany sings. To show everybody how we passed the time. And all the boys around the world could peek into my home. So there's always someone watching, and I never feel alone. Barry asks Gouquette if she wants to make sexy. He licks his fingers and rubs them over his chest, going,
Miss O'Honey, me rub you wrong time.
To Gouquette. Gouquette stares at him like she wants to smack him. Which is funny, because she's about 5 feet tall, and also because she probably doesn't even know what he's saying. All she knows in English are donut names. Carl turns round to check the door, and everyone who is watching quickly looks down at their donuts, except for two girls in a booth who look back at him.
Me Rocky Brojop,
Barry is saying now.
Brojop. Brojop.
He helps her out by sucking an imaginary dick, using his curled hand and his tongue in his cheek. She stares at him with eyes like stones.
You stupid bitch, he wants a blowjob,
Carl says.
How much is a blowjob?
He takes a 5 euro note from his wallet and crumples it up and throws it at her. It hits her on the arm and bounces back to land on the counter.
How much?
He says again. Now he balls up a 20 and throws it at her. This one hits her on the cheek. It annoys him that she doesn't scrabble after the money or even move at all. He takes out another 20, then sees Barry is staring at him.
What the fuck are you doing?
What?
What are you doing with the fucking money?
Trying to get you a fucking blowjob, asshole,
Carl says. Barry's face is flared up red.
No, you spat. I mean, why didn't you tell me you had all that money? What the fuck were we doing sniffing fucking furniture polish if you had money all along?
I forgot,
Carl says.
You forgot? How did you forget?
Carl does not know how he forgot. Suddenly, he feels quite tired. Everything is starting to fizz away at the edges, like a pill in water. He wishes he had the orange tube, but it is in Barry's pocket, and Barry is looking way too angry to give it to him. But then, hooray! Here comes the gook running out of the back room, waving his arms and shouting,
You ba! You ba!
You ba! You ba!
They shout back at him. Carl knocks over the plastic straw holder, and straws with different coloured stripes spill over the floor. The gook rushes through the hatch in the counter. Carl raises his fists just to see what'll happen. Instantly, the gook clicks into this Jet Li-type martial arts pose, and for a moment they both stay like that, no one moving. Except the gook's nostrils get bigger and smaller. Then Carl and Barry turn and run out of the shop, laughing and shouting,
You ba! You ba!
Across the road, on the wall of the park, Barry is happy again, so they can have more pills. Carl crushes them up with a key. In the big glass window of the donut house, Gouquette is crouched down, picking up straws.
Do you think he's riding her?
Barry says.
Charlie.
Sometimes they call the gook Charlie. Carl says,
I don't know.
Above them, there is a full moon in the sky and stars. The moon is a blank of the Earth, that the Earth orbits around.
He wouldn't get anyone else to ride him,
Barry says.
Those gooks have wormy little dicks.
He makes an imaginary rifle with his hands and points it at Gouquette and fires two bullets into her. He discharges the shells and reloads.
I'd ride her,
he says. Carl doesn't say anything. The pills keep squirting out from under the key. Twice he has to pick them up off the ground.